Good morning.
Good morning.
Man, I had a rough time getting up this morning.
Oh
That's
yeah.
why I'm late, yeah.
Actually, that worked out good 'cause for some reason I did too.
That was weird. I usually am up at like 5 a.m. and I was like almost 7:30, and then I had to take Harley and then go get breakfast.
Yeah, I actually got up around 6:30 to feed the animals and then I decided to lay back down for a little bit, and sometimes I'll fall back to sleep, but sometimes I won't. And if I do, it's usually only for a little bit. But Kara came in like 45 minutes, half an hour ago, and woke me up because I was still sleeping.
That's the way I was. It's like a lazy Sunday. I wish it was a lazy Sunday, like where I didn't have to mow the grass or anything. I could just chill.
Yeah, I got stuff to do later too.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately. And I have to organize comics every Sunday, which sucks, or else the kitchen looks like a comic fest, so it's like a job but I can't complain about it, or Barb will say, "Stop getting so many comics." See, you can't. I can't complain about something like that. I just
Yeah, you
have to
gotta keep
suck it
up.
up and do it.
Yeah, the you don't want to have to do it, but the alternative is even worse.
Yeah, the alternative is worse.
That's
All right. Well, did you want to start off with Battlestar, or do you want to talk comics first?
it doesn't matter. I suppose we could switch it up and talk comics first.
Okay.
You want to
Yeah, why don't you
that?
kick us off?
Okay. Let's see. What should I talk about first? How about It's Midnight, The Witching Hour?
Ah, DC.
It's not actually The Witching Hour, but we can pretend. I got The Witching Hour 52. So this is the last issue before The Witching Hour Rebirth.
I
No, this came out in, looks
don't
like
think
this
I've
came out in.
ever read any of those. I don't
This is
think I
the
have any of them.
I think this is the first one I've ever read. I know it's the only one I have. It came out in 75, this issue. It's 25-cent cover price. But it's got three different stories in it. The like a lot of horror comics, or these type of comics, they would have hosts, characters that appear in every issue and tell you the stories. And the Witching Hour used these three witches. Cynthia is the name of one of them, but there's basically a really old one, a kind of chubby one, and a blonde pretty one. And each one of them tells one of the stories in here. The first one's called The Hidden and the Hideous, and it was written by Carl Wessler, with art by Lee Elias. And it features this guy who is running late for a train. He's like a businessman. He gets on the train and there's no passengers. When he gets off in town, he can't remember where he works and he's kind of confused. He sits down and looks in his briefcase to see if there's any clues in there, and he just finds a sandwich for his like that he figures he must have been fixed by his wife for his lunch, but then he realizes he can't remember his wife or even remember what her name is. So he thinks maybe he's going out of his mind. He starts walking around town. He's trying to remember, but the opposite happens. And more he walks around, the less he can remember. And he looks in his wallet and he sees his ID, the name Ernest Hoskins, and the address on there doesn't really mean anything to him. But he thinks, well, maybe if I go to this address, which is apparently my house, it'll help me remember everything. So he gets back on a train. And the train's empty again. And it's getting to be night by this point. It gets the train stops. It's the only station, and so he's just letting instinct guide him. He kind of goes to this kind of creepy looking town, and he's like, "Well, I know this is my street. This is where I live." But when he someone answers the door, it's this bird-like creature. It's dressed like a person. It's got hair like a person, but its face and its arms and stuff are. It's got like three taloned fingers and like a pink face with the yellowish beak area or beak face and spiky teeth. It's like and their reaction to him is if he's disgusting, like
Is
ah,
it the same
disgusting
guy that's on
monster.
the cover or no?
Yeah, it kind of looks like the creature. There's a on the cover. There's a creature behind a man sitting in a armchair, holding on to the back of his head. And yeah, it's funny because that scene doesn't happen in here. It's kind of like a twist on the story, but yeah, it's one of those creatures like on the cover. So the creatures actually attack him, calling him a disgusting monster. So he runs into the house, tries to escape from them, and eventually he goes upstairs and he runs into a trap and he backs up, but he backs up out of a window and falls for the second story. So the creatures, there's three of them, like kind of looks like a woman and two kids by their sizes. As he's dying, he's thinking to himself, "Oh, it all comes back to me now." And the creatures reach up to him, and the witch, she throughout the story, throughout all these stories, whichever witch is telling the story, they'll comment on the story and explain things. And she says, remembering who and what he was completed the cycle that started when the wrong train carried Ernest into a world he never knew existed. And this caused him to remember. So they're looking over him, his dead body, and they see that he's got a face like them too. And they're like, "Oh, I killed my beloved husband." And they're confused. It's like, "We looked like a hideous monster. Why did he look like that? Maybe he had a disease." So they accidentally killed their dad. So that was kind of,
The
I don't know.
comics code wouldn't approve that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Apparently they did though, because it did stamp it on the cover. But yeah, so something to do with that train that he got on caused him to look like a human or something. The middle story is called Honeymoon for a Corpse. It's told by the blonde witch, and this woman, she's with her, apparently it's her fiance Spencer. She's calling her mother to tell him that they just got engaged, and the mom's saying, "Oh, I can't wait till your father will be so pleased." And then she yells down to the basement and to her husband, and said, "Did I hear what I thought I heard, Eloise? You did indeed, Jonathan dear. Wilma's found herself another husband to be." Then we see down in the basement, the father and I guess which would be your brother. So excellent, Thaddeus and I are nearly finished digging the nuptial bed, and they're digging like holes in the earth and the ground in the basement. Then we follow their daughter Wilma and her fiance back to town. They come to the house, they meet the family, and but everyone's kind of just playing along. And then Thaddeus, her brother, is like, "Why don't you stop all this lying? Thaddeus, control yourself." "No, I won't. Get out of here before it's too late. If you marry Wilma, you'll..." And then thwap, he gets knocked on the back of the head by his uncle or somebody like that, knocks him out. And they just kind of explain it away as, Thaddeus isn't right But then they take them into where they're supposed to have their wedding, and it's like very clearly like this like satanic hall. There's like this demon face on the ground, and there's skulls and snakes and stuff like that on the altar, and it's really creepy and stuff. And he's like kind of nervous, but he goes through with it. And he said, "Now let's go to the banquet hall." And but Spencer tells him, "Oh no, we got to get out of here. It's in late. We got to catch the last train because our honeymoon takes off in the morning." So like, "Oh no, what do we do now?" And well, they pretty much trap him. The phone's dead, and they try to get out of the house, and the door's locked, and the windows are barred. And so then he realizes something crazy is going on. He's trying to, so he actually goes down to the cellar because that's the only place that's open. And he crashes a window, and then he actually sees like the freshly dug grave in the ground. So then the bell strikes midnight, and this devil appears with a pitchfork, and it says, "I've come again to take your youngest. Is she ready?" And the father says, "No, we've thwarted you once more. She's offered another husband as substitute." So apparently, this whole time, like, you know, they've been, she's been duping. They've been getting her to dupe men into being a sacrifice to this devil, so that she is not sacrificed. But this time, she's had enough. She pushes her fiance out of the way, and she gets zapped by the pitchfork instead, and like, crumbles to a pile of dust. And so they have to explain since. To Spencer that this is their punishment for having once disobeyed Lucifer, that Thaddeus, the one that they hid before, every, once a year he the Lucifer returns and inhabits the body of Thaddeus to claim another member of their family. So that's why they would have to actually marry she'd actually have to marry the man so that he was a member of their family to be a suitable sacrifice. And then finally,
What are some of the creators on there? Are there any like creators that we know?
let's see. So the last one, well, the first one I think I mentioned was not well, Lee Elias. I think I've heard his name as the artist. And the first name, Carl Wessler. Sounds
Haven't
kind of
heard of them.
familiar. That one I just finished, that was written by, that was creators that I've heard of, is that was written by George Kashtan, who did a lot of DC stuff, and art was done by Don Perlin.
Oh, I know Don.
Yeah. And this final one was written by Carl Wessler again. I'm trying to see if there's a an art credit. There's like a little artist signature kind of thing that looks like J. Lofamia. Does that sound familiar at all?
No.
Yeah, not to me. But yeah, this last one.
The only one that actually sounded familiar to me was Perlin. But I know him from Valiant more than anything.
Okay. Yeah, I know Kashtan wrote a bunch of DC stuff. Not remembering what, but I think around
Yeah.
that same era.
It's pretty cool that the series lasted about 10 years. I mean, it probably had a big hiatus in there, but
And I noticed that when I was, because I was checking my database just to see when the series started and ended and stuff like that, and I noticed they brought the title back, The Witching Hour, a couple times for Vertigo for miniseries. The last time was about 3 years ago for a one shot or 2 issues or something like that of just like
A one-shot Vertigo, yeah.
yeah,
I
just the
bought that.
anthology of.
Well, I think that was when they were doing the quarterly anthologies. They had like Time Warp, The Witching Hour, and a couple others.
Oh, right, yeah. I remember Time Warp Because then Tom
Tom
can have a
King,
story in that.
yeah.
Yeah,
That was his
I'm picking that
first,
up.
I think.
Yeah.
It's unusual to have your first comic story with a major big two.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, the last story I think is the shortest. It's called Flowers for Your Funeral, and it's told by the old witch. But it's about a woman who sees her husband buying, or actually giving flowers to another woman. Yeah, that liar telling me all these weeks he's been overtime. So she actually plans to kill the other woman. See, they can be together forever. I'll have them buried in the same grave. So she's playing along later when he says he's got to work overtime again. She follows him this time from the start, and he goes to the flower shop. He's like, "Oh, flowers again." Or that's actually a recap to how she got to there. She sees him buying flowers. So who's he buying flowers for? He never spends any money on me. Besides, we can't afford that anyways. And she sees him go to this house where we saw the story start. He's spending a fortune on that hussy. He won't spend anything on me. I'll kill her. She's got to die. Wait a minute. She likes gifts, does she? I'll send her a gift, a box of candy, poisoned candy. So then he comes home later on, and she's sleeping, and he's got a package for her. And well, he's got two packages for her. One's a bracelet, it looks like, and the other one's this wrapped up box. He says, "Happy birthday." She's like, "Oh, suddenly you remember my birthday, but you can't hide your guilt. I phoned your office twice. You weren't working." And he says, "Yeah, of course I was. I was moonlighting. I was working nights at another job delivering bouquets for a florist." It's a watch that he bought her. It looks like a bracelet. I guess it makes sense. It could be a watch too. And he's telling her, "Yeah, there's this Alice Hopper," which we know is the name of the woman that she thought he was cheating on her with. Her ex-boyfriend keeps sending her flowers. She keeps throwing them away, but when I told her it's her birthday, so meanwhile, as this happening, the woman's opening up the other box, her other gift, and it's chocolates, and she's eating one. And as he tells her, she got that box of candy. She figured it was from him too, so she gave it to me for you. And she's eating the box of, so she finds out she's eating the box of poison candy that she tried to send to the woman he thought was cheating on her. And so the last panel is the old witch is telling the story over top of a casket, which is presumably the woman's. So nice dark little story. Probably the best one in some ways. It was short and sweet,
Yeah.
but overall it was a fun issue. This kind of thing doesn't really sell that well nowadays, but these kind of books are a little more popular back in the day. Witching Hour is not as, you don't hear the name of that as often, but you like have House of Mystery and House of Secrets and stuff like that that used to sell a lot better.
Yeah.
And it can be fun stories, but
Leo
definitely
Henry
has that.
stories.
Yeah, O. Henry, yeah.
Yeah,
It definitely has a similar
like
feel
those
to.
stories a lot, but I can't like I'll have I can't like read them back to back to back. Like I like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'll like to do a Tales of the Crypt and then 2 months later read another one, but like every month, it's kind of hard.
I can see that, yeah.
Although the TV show I liked a lot, like Tales from the Crypt, the HBO,
Oh,
they did a
right,
really
yeah.
good job of it. Yeah, that I do own two of them, so I do have some of those. Not much though. There's like 80 issues or something. So it was a pretty good run. That one I'm missing a lot of, like House of Mystery and Tales or House of what was that Secrets. I have more of those than I where you have it Cain and Abel doing the
Oh,
stories.
yep.
More of those than I do of any other, but of all the genres, I'm missing a lot in the horror, because my goal of 1973, that's where I'm missing, have the biggest gaps, is in the horror. All the other stuff, war and superhero stuff, I got most of it. But my pick is, we have some friends that are actually moving out east. We used to go to like CC hockey with them and all that stuff. And it's one of Barb's coworkers, and her wife gave me a bunch of like Gold Key comics. And one of them I was really excited about. Well, actually two of them. Pink Panther, because I've been reading it from American Gothic Press. And I was real fond of the Pink Panther cartoon. And then Wacky Races, because I'm in that Wacky Races kick. So this is Wacky Races number 5. And it makes me appreciate the current series even more, because they took this concept and they made it into more of a real life post-apocalyptic story, whereas this one was more like Laugh Olympics, except in Laugh Olympics you had different competitions. This is always a race. And this cartoon had like, I mean, comic had like four small stories, and there everything is very, very similar in the fact that you have all these crazy cars in a race to get to the finish line, but it always focus on Dick Dastardly and Muttley, because they're the ones that of all these people that are inclined to cheat. And usually what happens in all of these stories is that everything that they do backfires. So in the first story, he was taking Dick Dastardly was taking them over like this really rocky area. So they, you know, like a couple of the cars are having a really rough time. He like launches a bag full of mosquitoes onto one car. I thought that was pretty funny. And he says, "I hate to put the bite on them, but I guess they get the point." And then he gets this is like right out of Looney Tunes, right? He gets like a huge rubber band between two trees, and the racing path is right between the two trees. Except when he puts the rubber band between the two trees, it pulls the two trees together and squashes him. And you have like the professor's car is really interesting, 'cause like when he's going through the rocky area, he has his contraption, pulls out an iron and starts to iron it. And Penelope Pitstop, actually her tires turn to like powder puffs as tires. And the one I really like is the Smash Brother, the Slag Brothers. They look like two Captain Cavemen. I mean, they look like right out of that cartoon Captain Caveman, and they're in their cave car, and they just pull out their mallets and they just start swinging at the ground to like level it out. And they have Blubber the Bear holding onto the tires in one. It's pretty funny. The guy with the tank. So yeah, all the stuff you relate to. And all along, it looks like Dick Dastardly he's in last, but he finds this shortcut, and it's really not a shortcut. Somebody had planted that sign somewhere for him, so he thought he was gonna come in first, but he didn't. And then it always shows in who comes in first, second, and third. So Penelope Pitstop came in first. The professor always seems to rank, and then the Anthill Brothers. Those guys are a lot of fun, because they are mobsters, and they're like those, I don't know if you watch Looney Tune mobsters when they had Bugs Bunny or something. They're kind of like that. They're pretty hilarious. And then the second story, they had to go through a forest. And there's this one like horror vehicle, the Creepy Coupe. And they have like a little dragon like hangs out of the the back of the car and he just like snags people out of the car. I mean, it's just insane. And in this one, again, Dick Dastardly screws himself over because he has like this saw blade he sends upon other people and ends up sawing him and Muttley in half, like their car in half. The next race was a pretty cool thing. It was like a bridge that had a switch. So you could like open it or close it or open it and close it. And he had devised it so it would they couldn't get across. But when he went across it, he actually drove into the water. So that was pretty funny. This also had a cool ad for this. The year of this is 1971. I don't know who the creators are. None of them are credited. But it had like a Columbia, an old Columbia House ad, and some of the things you had on the top were like Three Dog Night, Jimi Hendrix, Barbara Streisand, The Fifth Dimension, the soundtrack from The Love Story, Steppenwolf, Janis Joplin. But it says you can pick any 8 tapes or records for only $3.98, and it's a take your pick. You could get an 8-track cartridge, cassette tapes, reel to reel. I don't think I've ever seen these ads with reel to reel.
No.
And then of course the record, but that was odd. Reel to reel. I didn't know reel to reel was still a thing in 71, but I guess it was. I wonder if they were
different.
I wonder what the quality of that was versus like an 8-track, because an 8-track was like not a good a good quality like for long term purposes.
Right. It probably was pretty good if you had the equipment. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
But it was probably kind of a pain.
And then the last story was another race. I really want to find these, but if you like go to eBay or go to like My Comic Shop or any of them, they're hard to find. There are not many of them. This series was only 7 issues. And the only issue that you could like find are like 1 and 2. And then the other ones are like really hard to find. And some of them are quite expensive or CGC graded, and I don't want that. But
kind of thing that people then think to save, preserve the kids' comics.
Yeah, I actually think there's another Wacky Races, but it was titled something else that Archie put out. But I haven't been able to track that one down. But yeah, it's like I would love to get the DVD collection of that because it's my favorite Hanna-Barbera, and just like watch them all and then compare them to the current comic. I think it would maximize my already loving of the series. But yeah, it was good. And the last comic was boat related. He had all the racers go onto this boat. And then he actually shot a cannon in front of the boat so the boat couldn't go further. But the captain really screwed him up because he had like this long bridge that he could extend from the boat, and he let all the racers off. And he also organized for like a tractor to just pull Muttley and Dick Dastardly out of the race. And interesting on this race it was, again, I think Penelope that won. So she won 2 of the 3 races. And this was the race that Red Max and Peter Perfect, who they had in the first issue of Wacky Raceland. And they've had Penelope, of course. You know, a lot of it focused on Penelope. And this guy, Red Max, haven't shown too much, but they've shown the tank guy in Wacky Racelands. I don't think we've got the Slag Brothers very much, but I'm looking forward to seeing them now that I've seen them in this, because they don't really do much. They just have mallets, and they drive a cave car. And the other group that I'm really looking forward to seeing in the current series, if they show up, is the Mobsters. because they have like a mobster car, and they have that like mobster lingo, you know. You've read that mobster lingo before. Use and yeah. So yeah, I liked it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed the cartoon. I used to see the reruns, the different Hanna-Barbera, different Hanna-Barbera cartoons. I especially like those ones like Wacky Raceland and Laugh Olympics and stuff like that, where you saw characters from different shows and stuff, and then the different sci-fi ones that are in Future Quest, in the Future Quest comic,
Yeah, for me it was
humanoids and stuff like that.
the Herculoids.
Herculoids, yeah, Herculoids.
I liked it more than
Ghosts and
Space
stuff.
Ghost. Just because I just thought those monsters were cool.
Yeah, I liked how they had the monsters
Oofla the
on it too.
Muck, and you had the dragon, and the one monster that could shoot things out of his horn.
Right, yeah. He kind of
And
looks
then
like a
Glop and
rhinoceros.
Gleep or whatever they were, the two ghost looking things.
Yeah, they look like slimes, kind
Yeah,
of
like slimes, yeah.
ghost slimes or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, I liked how that they were part of the team. Stuff
And
looked
it
awesome.
wasn't Ookla the Monk. That was from Thundar.
Yeah.
But it was that big thing looking creature, the one that had all the strength.
Yeah, it
Looked like
looks
a
kind of like a
big ape.
big rock ape made
R
out of
rock
rock.
ape, yeah. I
Yeah,
have that. I have the full collection of the Herculoids
Oh, the
on DVD,
DVD.
yeah.
Yeah,
I
that's cool.
wonder if they do have the wacky races, because I don't think it ran that long. Like, Laugh Olympics to me lasted a lot longer. At least it seemed like it did.
Yeah, they might, because it seems like they've been putting a lot of those out. Like, you can't really find them in stores, but you can order them online
Yeah.
and stuff.
You see the ads for the archives,
Yeah, the archives, yeah.
All right.
I read another DC book from a similar era. Actually, this might came out right around the same exact time, 75. It says it's an issue of Phantom Stranger. This is issue 35, and it's 25 cents also. But this has two stories in, and there's a Phantom Stranger story, and as the cover tells you, also in this issue, a Black Orchid story. I've read some Phantom Stranger from this era before, but I never read any Black Orchid. But I know, like, when the character was, I read the character when she was a part of the Justice League Dark team
Yeah,
for a little while
Suicide
there.
Squad too.
Was she on Suicide
Yeah,
Squad for a
yeah.
while?
And she had a Vertigo series.
Yeah, I haven't read that. I knew she did have that. I haven't read it, but so the Phantom Stranger story is interesting. Let's see. It's actually written by David Michelinie.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, with
I mostly know him from his Marvel stuff,
yeah,
except for
same here.
his war books.
Yeah, definitely know him from Marvel, but the art is by someone named Jerry Talak. Yeah, it's pretty interesting where it starts out with the Phantom Stranger dressing you, and then he comes up to this young woman that seems like she's going to be jumping from a bridge, but so he goes over to help her and talk her out of it and stuff, and when she takes his hand, it seems to kind of electrocute him or something and knocks him out. And then this old man and two middle-aged guys come pull up in what looks like kind of like an ambulance of some sort, and they load him into a coffin and lock it all up and put it back into the back of the van and drive him to this mansion. So then It turns out that this older man, he's a doctor, and he's got a this woman Margaret that is strapped into all these machines. She's lying on a bed and she's strapped in all these machines. She doesn't look very well. She's just asking Nathan, the older man's name is Nathan, and she's just asking him to let her die. He's like, "No, you can't mean that." So then we get a flashback to how things got to this way. He used to work as a biochemist, and he's very talented, but very insecure. So even though his abilities should have been letting him like lead the lab, his emotional issues kept him in a inferior position. Then he meets this woman named Margaret, and he takes a lot of encouragement from her, but he becomes obsessed with her. He needs her to be with him all the time, so that he can succeed. He needs her even to work as his assistant. She's telling him, I don't. She doesn't have any experience. I can't be your assistant. And he said, "Oh, that's fine. I'll just teach you as you go along. But I have to have you with me every moment." And because of that, she ends up later making a mistake, mixing chemicals, and there's this explosion, and she's severely injured. And basically, as what it comes down to is that is how she ends up in the position that she's in. And he tries a number of different things. Science is not working for him, so he tries to learn some magical means of restoring her. He finds like a ancient text and summons this demon. He continues to do different things to the demon's bidding to try to get him to restore his wife. And he finally, this demon asks him to find the phantom stranger. He says, "You must seek him out, for it is his soul that'll set us free." And so that brings us back to the present, why he summoned the phantom, or why he kidnapped the phantom stranger. But when they go to unlock the coffin and get the phantom stranger out, it's empty. Of course, just some locks on a box is not gonna keep the phantom stranger captive. And the phantom stranger tells him, "We're not gonna let you endanger thousands of people by setting this demon free just for the sake of one woman." Obviously the guys that he has working with him can't do much against the stranger, but the woman from the very beginning that we saw did have some ability against him. Her name is Gola, and it turns out that she is not human. We've already saw she has some kind of abilities. Well, she commands these chains to these shackles to bind the Phantom Stranger, and they string him up by his arms. And it's explained that Gola is not human. She's kind of a creation that these demons that he's been communicating with them helped create. So, the Phantom Stranger tries to call out to her to help him appeal to her humanity, but she's not actually human. We see a lot of times she's kind of staring off into space in a really awkward way. So long and short of it is they try to tear out the Phantom Stranger's essence, and he eventually gets free. There's a bit of a battle there, but ultimately Margaret, she's this guy Nathan, he's kind of gone and off the deep end, so she's really, as we sort of saw an indication of earlier, she doesn't want any of this really. And while Nathan is blaming the fam stranger for what happens, and when she gets disconnected from the machines and things like that, we can tell that Margaret is the one that's actually happy for what the Phantom Stranger has done, sort of rescuing her from her, allowing her to die, rescuing her from what her husband has been putting her through, keeping her alive. So, but Nathan vows to, I don't know if those ever was followed up on, but Nathan vows to hunt the stranger down and destroy him. So that was a pretty interesting, kind of fun story. Actually, kind of in some ways is of a similar nature to the stories in The Witching Hour in some ways. But
The only
let's see.
difference is he doesn't always, he's sometimes involved.
Right.
The other two are just like the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah, where there's
They just introduce, yeah.
Phantom Strangers active in the story and stuff like that, but the story of Nathan and Margaret and like sort of the tragic ending, at least for Nathan, is it's sort of, I mean, it's sort of a happy ending for Margaret, but not really. It's just like her husband has put her in this state, and it's just an act of mercy on the, so it's sort of a dark story. The other story is by Shelley Mayer, and with art by Nestor Redondo. So it's a black orchid story, as I mentioned. It focuses on this character named Howard Lung, and he's built this computer to make himself rich at the expense of others. And it's like 70s idea of a master computer, so it's humongous. So this guy, he's at, it's late, he's out on the streets, and he's looking for a place called Jarrett for, he's looking for Jarrett Enterprises, and he's just like one street off. So when he finds the right place, Jarrett comes out. The guy's name is Dubbish. He says, "Get back, get in here." He's like, "I didn't tell you the right, I didn't tell you the wrong street address." And so it seems that this guy Dubbish is here to see about a job that Jarrett has. He says, "Open up this package, and then we'll talk about the job." So the guy opens up the package, and there's a pistol in there. And he says, "All right, pick that up." And he says, "I, of course I could pick it up." He's like, "Oh, you even put your finger on the trigger. Excellent. Now put it back in the box. Just one more thing. Here's a cigarette lighter. See if you can get it to light on the first try." He's like, so he's like, "All right, well, I guess." And so he goes to light the cigarette lighter, and it kind of explodes. A bunch of stuff comes out of it, and it makes a really loud noise. So all of a sudden, a police officer comes in, probably the one that was nearby helping the guy find the place. And he said, "Did I just hear a shot?" Said, "Oh no, that was just the cigarette lighter that of Mr. Jarrett's." And then when he looks, and Mr. Jarrett's gone. He said, "I've never," police is like, "I've never heard of a cigarette lighter making that much noise." It's like, "Good, just I better check the back office." He goes in there, and Mr. Jarrett's on the floor dead, and there's a pistol on the ground near him. He said, "Oh, I knew I heard something." So the guy gets in trouble for killing Mr. Jarrett, who had just been, telling him to do these weird tasks. Well, then we see apparently Mr. Jarrett out on the street back behind the building, and he takes off his mask, and it's actually a different man underneath. So he was just pretending to be Mr. Jarrett, and he got the kid to hold the kind of the dumb kid to hold on to the gun to get his fingerprints on it, and he had set up that trick lighter to get powder burns on his hands. So he set him up. His name is Mr. Flint. So here's where the Black Orchid comes in. She comes swooping in on this guy who she calls Mr. Flint. Said, "This is your. I'm giving you a chance to do things the right way. Go back and turn yourself in." Of course, he does, and he radios into his headquarters. Said, "It's an emergency. Some loony dame is wise to me. Headquarters, come in." They said, "Don't. We're coming in, Flint. Don't burn the mask." So he burns the mask, destroy that evidence, but he's not all that wise himself, because when the help comes in, well, the help is just his former employers or whoever they were. They come flying by and they basically do a drive-by shooting and take him out. So they're covering their tracks, and the Black Orchid goes running after him. And so they're trying to shoot her also, but the bullets are bouncing off her, and they're like, "What the heck's going on?" She's flying. They're like, "Who the hell is this chick?" And they say, "Hold on, she threw something at the car. Take cover. It's probably a grenade." And they said, "It's not a grenade. It's an orchid, a black orchid." And come to think of it, that's what she kind of looks like. We would jump a few minutes, and they've taken it to their boss, and he's looking at the black orchid that they brought with them. He says, "You guys can't possibly expect me to believe your story, and this flower doesn't prove anything. I'm not going to believe that, you know, just some, there's some flying lady who whose bullets bounce off of her." And but then they see that there's a note concealed in the flower, and it says basically that she knows all about their the frame job that they're trying to pull, and they've got till midnight tomorrow to clear the name of the young kid, the Joel Dubish. So they're surprised at how much she knows, and we see this master computer fills most of the room, and basically their boss, he says, "You know, I've worked on this for 20 years, and there's nothing in the world that this computer doesn't know. So let's ask the computer question: who is this Black Orchid person?" And unfortunately, we have to wait till the next issue to find out the rest of the story.
Damn.
Well, it's kind of a bummer.
the one thing that's interesting about her is she's had lots of, like, it's a lot of different people. Like, it's not always the same character.
I see. Like the alter ego or whatever.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, the one I'm mostly familiar with is the original, which first appearance was Adventure Comics 428, which I have.
Okay.
And then she was also in the Suicide Squad. So, but like you said, you know, Justice League Dark more recently, but she was a different character in that.
Yeah. What era of Suicide Squad, when was she in that?
Towards the middle of the Ostrander run.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read that whole thing.
I love that Suicide Squad. Like, it's got to be like one of my top 10 titles of all time. As far as like, even when I had trouble reading comics because of college, I always would read Suicide Squad. Like, that's was my go-to book. But I always love the idea of villains in their own books.
Yeah,
because we have heroes and we have anti-heroes, which are, you know, like Punisher and stuff, you know,
yeah,
will commit crime for the better cause. But it you don't often have like your Secret Six or your Suicide Squad or this, you know, this Foes of Spider-Man that they recently did and stuff like that. You know, that I love that stuff. I love when they focus on the other side.
Yeah,
I
it's
know they don't
interesting.
sell well, but I find them fascinating.
It's I enjoy them too. It's because with anti-heroes, we also that's they still have a similar goal to the heroes. It's about the means that are different, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And
But with villains, their motives are all over the place.
right.
Do you know what I mean? That,
Yeah.
and it's interesting to see. I'm just gonna go forth with just a current example because it just recently came out. But there's the all new Superman, you know, which is the Chinese Superman. And the thing I find interesting, have you read that yet?
I just read it, issue one, yeah.
Well, the thing I find interesting about that is their approach to this character, because he's not somebody we like. He's a bully, and we hate bullies. So I'm really interested to see how that unfolds, because I like when they throw something different at me like that. So I'm excited to see where that goes. But yeah, Black Orchid was one of those characters, kind of like Bronze Tiger or some of the other ones that were more. I don't think she had one of those bombs implanted in her. In other words, she was there, a part of the missions, but she wasn't one of those villains that they injected the bomb into.
Yeah, she was there to kind of help out and keep an eye on the other characters.
And then you had the Neil Gaiman launch of that character. So yeah, that was the Vertigo one. Those covers were pretty interesting. They were, you know, Dave McKean, the painted style. I remember looking, it was very abstract. Like when they would show her, it was like you'd see the face of a woman, but then you'd see kind of like paint all over the place. You know, purple and violet and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, she's an interesting character, for sure. And hopefully we'll see her show up somewhere. They are doing a lot of weird stuff with Rebirth. Like the one thing I wanted to point out is there's, let's see, the Deadman hard. What are they called? They're like the maxi series. I mean, the mini series that are deluxe that came out in the 90s, I believe. It was Dead Man, Exorcism. They were the Kelly Jones ones, Lost Souls and Love After Death. And I love these series so much. They were like 3-issue deluxe format books. And if you look at the new previews, they got another deluxe format Dead Man story. And to this day, those are the Dead Man stories ingrained in my brain, are these three deluxe series books. They were the square bound prestige format from like the early 80s and 90s, and man, they were just so well written. Mike Baron and Kelly Jones did these series, and they came out like every 2 years. And they were the square bound, but if you ever get a chance to read them, they're good, and they have one in the preview. So I was like, wow, they got like a Hawkman, Adam Strange that are kind of like not highlighted. Like DC's not putting a lot of advertising dollars in these titles, but they are back there, you know. And it seems pretty cool that they're still gonna do some of these minis from time to time. I know they won't sell well, but that's the one I'm really looking forward to, is for the Hawkman Adam Strange, because of their Ran Thanagar thing. And I'm looking forward to the Dead Man for sure.
Hawkman and Adam Strange are on the cover of previews, so that's cool.
Yeah, they did give them the cover of previews, but when they usually what they do when they highlight stuff in the solicits, they put them on the first few pages. And they didn't do that. And
Hopefully they do okay.
interested in the young animal, which is the it's almost like Vertigo, but launched by indie creators at DC, but they're highlighting it.
Yeah.
That should be interesting, like the Doom Patrol, Cave Carson, and Shade the Changeling Girl. They sent a wicked promo. I don't know if you saw the video I posted, but I don't usually save the promos that DCBS sends me, but this one's amazing. It's got that old Who's Who vibe to it on the cover, and it has all in black and white. It has like Who's Who entries for the Young Animals titles that are coming out. I thought that was amazing.
Oh,
like
nice.
a cool retro feel. But let me talk about my book. I'm going to be quick on these because we started late and all that. But I was listening to Gotham by Geeks, and yeah, I know I'm part of it, but this particular episode I wasn't part of. I don't normally listen to my own podcasts unless I have to during
yeah.
an editing process of some sort.
Right,
and I don't edit very often unless somebody says, hey, can you find this and remove it or something like that. So I did listen to it, and Campbell said, God, Daryl made a statement like Mike likes all those characters like the Creeper, blah, blah, blah. And Campbell says, I hate the Creeper. So what that got me going down is down a tangent, which is I love to go down these tangents, but I hate them because then I get behind in the other stuff. But I became obsessed with Ditko's The Creeper. So I went on this Creeper thing. I have all the issues of The Creeper, whether they be in World's Finest or the Ditko Creeper or the Steve Niles Creeper. And I even have his first appearance in Showcase 73. But I also have the collection, and these collections were put together exactly like the Fourth World stuff that we read. And to me, that's like the hardcover with the paper quality. Like it's like that newsprint. I just love that format. Like it's like the best format for me. It just makes the art pop. And I read a lot of Creeper over the last couple of weeks, but the one I'm going to spotlight because it's fresh in my head and I just read it last night was a story from World's Finest. It's only 8 pages and it was 250. But it is story and art by Steve Ditko. A lot of the stories weren't written by Steve Ditko, although I think he has like a huge influence on the creative plot line, you know, because even though the writers have changed, like the first writer was Dan Siegel. He did it in Showcase 73 where they told his origin story. And then you got Dennis O'Neill who went by his alias, which is an unusual alias. I don't know why he had that name for a while and then it didn't last very long. His name was Sergius O'Shaughnessy, but that was Denny O'Neill. And what are you laughing at?
Shaughnessy.
Shaughnessy. Okay, Shaughnessy. Barb's correcting me.
There you go.
Thank you. I'm not Scottish or Irish or wherever that's originated from.
Oh, Barb. which is Barb then? Is she Scottish or Irish?
I think she's got a little bit of German in her.
German-Italian.
Oh, so it's at least the right continent then?
Yeah, German-Italian and Hispanic. She's a mutt.
Oh.
Like me. All right.
Yeah, better not dig that hole any deeper.
Yeah. Well, that's how they call dogs when they're not full bred.
Right. I don't know if that helps.
Yeah. But We've never had one that was like a dog that was, you know, we actually that we didn't get like from a rescue or something. None of our dogs have been full pits. Like Scooter was like a pit mastiff of some sort. Risa was a heeler pit, and Harley's a Great Dane pit. So they all
Yeah,
have their own.
mutts are usually healthier.
Oh yeah, they're healthier. Plus, you don't have go to, you don't have to deal with the breeders and all that stuff. And they're just as great.
It's usually a bad idea. I mean, some people they have to go to the breeder and all that, and then the dog has health problems and. The breeders aren't always, you're not always sure, like, are they ethical? And
Yeah.
anyway.
So that leads us to the Creeper.
Yeah,
This is
of
an eight-page
course.
story in World's Finest 250. The story and art is by Steve Ditko. It's called Beware of the Creeper, and it's a good retelling of the origin story, which is essentially he goes to a party as a reporter to try to find these gangsters, and there's Dr. Yaz, who's a scientist that was developing a serum for molecular rearranging, and also like a super soldier serum for the army. And he ends up buying this costume, which is a mishmash of costumes, at a costume party, because this is a costume party that he has to go to. He gets stabbed with a knife trying to protect Dr. Yaz by a gangster called Devlin. And that's when he injects him with the serum, and he implants a device inside his skin where the cut is. And then he gave him like this trip thing, this little switch where he could switch it on and off. And that lets his costume come on and off. And Jack Ryder is kind of an interesting character because he's not a likable guy. He's kind of a jerk. He kind of reminds me of, man, I forget what that guy's show was. He was a talk show host in the 80s or 90s, but he was kind of like a smoking jerk. And that's kind of what this guy was. And this guy, it opens up with Devlin, who we haven't seen since Showcase number 73, getting out of prison and wanting to seek revenge against the judge and the Creeper. And there's one guy there. This is the comedy relief of the story. His name is Ben Brimley. They call him, what do they call him? It's like, man, I can't remember what they call him. They call him Bruise. And there's a reason for, I guess, calling him Bruise is he's accident prone and he's always getting beaten up. So he's a reporter that comes out, and as soon as Devlin comes out of the prison, he's getting released. He's saying, "Can I interview him? You're a reporter." And he gets beat up really bad by Devlin's goons. And then he's in the hospital and he's like, "I'm dying." And then he talks to Jack Ryder and is, "I need you to revenge me and tell the story." And Jack Ryder is like, "You ridiculous bastard! You got a couple crack ribs, but I'll play along." He's like, "I'm sorry, brother. You're dying. You're gonna die a legend, and I'll get your story out there." He's not dying, and he goes out there. Devlin is going after the judge, and he puts on the same costume he had at the costume party because he wants the Creeper to know who he is, and so he confronts the judge and actually shoots the judge. The Creeper doesn't get there in time, but he does get there in time to get the ambulances and such to come save the judge. He does not die, which is good. And then the Creeper goes after him. And one thing I really like on this story is they focus on like they're gonna like trap the Creeper in this dark mansion, but the Creeper comes in and all you just hear is this crazy laughter. Think of this like laughter that drives people insane, just laughing all over the place. And they're like, "Shoot him!" And they're like blasting in the dark everywhere. And they think they shoot the Creeper, but it's just like a stuffed dummy, and then the creeper comes out and smashes them up. And sure enough, that guy that is in the hospital, he's like, "Well, I'm not gonna die," and he goes out there to tell the story. And when he's taking Devlin down, some of the goons are leaving the building and they run him over. So he's back in the hospital and he's telling Rick, the writer, that he's going to die again and he needs to tell his story again. So it was like a fun story. And it played a lot about his origin. And I thought it was cool that they brought the character that's kind of one of the characters that created the creeper in the first place. You know, these are the goons that stabbed him, that were kidnapping Dr. Yaz because they were communists and they were trying to send him back to either to Russia. Yeah, they were sending him back to Russia.
Hmm.
So, yeah, it was a fun story. Plus, I'm almost done with this book. I only have I would encourage you, if you're interested in the Creeper or if you're interested in Ditko, to check these out. Because it has all of the Ditko work on the Creeper, and that's pretty much what defined the Creeper. Because there's not a lot of Creeper work. I mean, there's like a Vertigo Creeper, there's the Steve Niles Creeper, there's one other Creeper series. There's not a lot, and they didn't last long. For some reason, this character didn't catch. And I kind of wonder why. Like, I can't figure it out. Your dog's crying. What's wrong? So that was World's Finest 250.
Hmm.
Why is Mabel whining?
Oh, you were talking to me?
Yeah.
I don't hear anything.
You don't hear that?
No.
Maybe it's a bird I'm hearing.
There's a bird like outside, kind of.
Yeah, that's probably a bird.
Oh, it's going, okay.
Woo, woo, woo. It almost sounds like a dog whining.
I thought you were talking to Barb.
Oh.
Telling her to take care of Harley.
I know Harley's under the table. Barb's eating breakfast, and Harley's hanging out. She'll be knocking at the door any second now.
Yeah, that must be the bird you hear. I didn't think it was loud enough to come through.
But I want to talk about one other quick one, and
yeah,
then
sure.
Before I do my finale, but I'm not going to talk a lot about it. So the other thing I've been reading a lot is Black Lightning by Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden. And this I like read all of this like last weekend or the weekend before last, and I read the first 8 issues. Revisiting the character, and I thought it was awesome. Like, I'm glad I bought this trade, even though I have the original issues, just to have it on the shelf, because I've always been a Black Lightning fan. Well, I read Black Lightning number 9, which was by Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden, again with Vince Coletta as the inker. Man, Vince Coletta did a lot. You know,
yeah.
when you look at almost all these, he inked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this
fast, I think.
Yeah, this featured Jefferson Pierce as a teacher, and it had a weird story. This one was like really hard to read the opening sequence because it had the standard opening, like when you're in the midst of action, and then it tells you how you got there.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way it read initially, but it was very kludgy because you have Black Lightning getting shot off the building by the Annihilist, and he's like an assassin, and he's got hostages on the building, and he knocked Jefferson Pierce or Black Lightning off the building, and he knocked him unconscious. Even though Black Lightning has the power of a shield, it's interesting the way Black Lightning came, and they never explain this, is his power base. A professor built a belt for him that gave him enhanced strength. I imagine it's like the strength of like 10 men. It's not like a Superman strength or anything. It's more like and he was a decathlete, like an Olympic guy too. Mm-hmm. So he already was like at the top of his game. He came back to a suicide slum And he had this belt which would give him electrical discharge powers, plus it would give him this shield, like a protective aura. Not in like Brainiac 5 realm, but it would give him a shield enough to get hit a bunch of times and him not to feel it. And it opens up really weird where he gets thrown off the building and then it like flashes back. But it doesn't go back to that scene, which is really confusing. He finds out that one of the hostages is his ex-wife, who's also teaching at the same school. And he's working with a this is pretty interesting. There's a detective that he works with, and the detective in the first 8 issues was trying to hunt him down. He thought he was corrupt vigilante that he wanted off the streets, and he was as bad as the 100 that he was trying to take down. And then once he had the finale of the whale storyline with, they became friends. And he even went on the paper publicly and said, like, Black Lightning's a hero. And the other thing that's cool is Suicide Slums in Metropolis. So you see, in the earlier issues, you see a relationship develop between Black Lightning and Jimmy Olsen. You see fights with Superman because he thinks he's messing with Jimmy Olsen. But in this one, the other thing is, like, Jim Corrigan is known to us as the Spectre. But there is an African-American named Jim Corrigan who's a police officer in Suicide Slum that doesn't like Jefferson Pierce. And they have to team up together to go after this Annihilist. And they have, like, a bunch of robots in the bottom cellar that almost kill the cop, but Black Lightning gets away and actually takes down the Annihilist. But it was a really cool story. And then at the end, his ex-wife comes in and just starts chewing him out. And she's like, I know who you are. I know you're Black Lightning. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then she just like, you better tell me everything you know about Black Lightning because I know you're him. So his ex-wife now knows that he's Black Lightning. And I'm a fan of these trades where they're collecting the older stories. And I love the paper. It's not that glossy shit. It's the newsprint paper, the thicker newsprint. And that's what this Black Lightning trade is in as well. So good stuff. I'd recommend it if you're ever interested. And if you like Batman the Outsiders and you like Black Lightning, then you should read this if you're curious about where he came from.
Yeah, it looked like a nice time. You had that with you at Heroes.
Yeah.
I remember I flipped through it and looked like a nice trade.
I didn't get a chance to read it at Heroes. I actually read it when we went to Cripple Creek the other day. And that's where it was. I had read the first 3. I'm sorry. And then I just read the rest of it couple weekends ago. I'm going to finish this one too. But the thing I wanted to mention about the Creeper one that I forgot to mention is it has unprinted material from the Comics Cavalcade stuff.
Oh, that's
cool. So it had a showcase issue that was never published. And those Comics Cavalcade things where they had the implosion, you know, the DC implosion, they canceled a bunch of titles.
Mm-hmm.
Those are hard to find, like those copies of the Cavalcade.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, you just can't find them, so having it in print is like awesome. And I think the Firestorm trade, if I remember correctly, the original 5 issues from Firestorm that launched the characters, they have one of those issues as well. So I like what DC's doing with their trades.
Yeah, that's cool that they've made that stuff available. For sure. Well, I have just one other thing I was going to talk about.
Do you want to go into some questions before we get into that? They're real quick.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Just as a quick break. We got 2 questions. Donnie Salvo said, when are you going to have me on again? We got to do that. I'm trying to coordinate my weekends because my weekends are starting to fill up.
Yeah.
Really fast and until like October, so we'll see. Maybe the next time me and Chris tag up, I'll send once we coordinate that date. I'll send you an invite and see if you're available, Donnie. The next one is from Brian Reigate, who we should thank for giving us the long email about Star Trek and his feelings.
Oh, right.
The Next Generation, as well as the motion picture. We appreciate you giving us that email. That was a great read. And it's always a pleasure to get emails from you, Brian. But he has another question. This is pretty interesting. And when he uses the word trade here, he does not mean like trade paperback. He means like if you traded comics as a kid.
Bartering.
He says, were there ever any comic trades you made as a kid that you later regretted? I remember trading copies of the old Frank Miller Wolverine miniseries for Beat Up Batman Year 3, Part 1, and a Transformers comic. Did you trade?
Yeah, that's a great question. I had pretty much only traded with one friend that I was friends with in middle school. We were both into comics, and we traded way too much. We traded with stuff too often, that and with expensive stuff. Sometimes my mom would get mad because we would trade comics, but we also trade, like, we'd have these huge trades that we'd work on for the longest period of time. We'd be sitting there all afternoon, like, okay, well, what if I add in this? It's like, well, if I take out this and I put in this, would you do it for this? And just we'd like sit there forever, and we'd trade, you know, we'd have comics in there, we'd have Stephen King books in there, we'd have like video games in there. Which is
That's awesome. That was serious bartering, Chris. Did you do, just out of curiosity, because I know we both come from like liking sports and baseball and stuff, like, and football. Did you trade baseball and football cards too?
Not as a part of that, but like I was into sports cards a little when I was a little younger.
Yeah.
And it didn't really last in, as I got older, but I did used to do baseball cards, and I think I probably made a lot of bad deals with those, because there were like older kids in the neighborhood that would take advantage of us, try to trade, get us to do bad trades.
Mm-hmm.
but yeah, I do remember. I don't know if I can remember specifically, but I know that the high value items for us that we would try to get off of each other and convince each other to trade were we were both into McFarlane, so. And we both would have a couple of the McFarlane Amazing Spider-Man issues. Probably the later ones, because even then the earlier ones, like closer to 300 and stuff, were too expensive for us to pick up. But those and like early issues of not really the Frank Miller Wolverine, but like early issues of the first Wolverine ongoing. Those were prized items for us and stuff like that. So I know there was a couple times where I traded a McFarlane Spider-Man issue, and like I'd get a ton of stuff for it, but then later on I'd be bummed that I didn't have the issue anymore.
What did you give in return, though?
I mean,
for those issues.
Yeah, I don't remember like the trades specifically.
Some of your X-Men go into that or no?
But yeah, I mean, well, we would trade the. There'd be McFarlane, there'd be Wolverine. I mean, we're kind of into the same similar stuff, so there'd be.
So it was like in, like into the
Liefeld, New Mutants.
Those are interesting though, because if you look at them today, those are worth money.
Yeah, they still, a lot of them still are worth something.
You could have traded the first Deadpool, for all I know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure either he or I at least owned the first Deadpool at one point.
Because
mm-hmm. I definitely remember the first Deadpool. And I remember both of us really liking Deadpool and drawing Deadpool a lot.
Yeah.
Besides Spider-Man, we would draw Spider-Man the most, but then we'd also try to draw Deadpool. And we used to do, the other thing we used to do, it's not just getting off trading, but we used to sit and we would go off separately, like, well, we would just both be working on it quietly, but we would make our own. We were always making lists of our top, like, 25 or top 50 superheroes.
The
You know,
list
work on
thing,
them for a
yeah.
long time and then compare them to each other. And we're constantly revising them and, like, moving characters up and down the lists and stuff like that. Always the Marvel.
Nice. For
And ranking them.
yeah, for me, I traded a lot because we didn't have a lot of money, so the trade was like it was big. And the things I regret trading, for the most part, most of the trades until one kid got involved, they were pretty much, I think, of equal value. It was like trading a Sergeant Rock for an unknown soldier, or getting into Marvel Team Up or Marvel 2-in-1 for something into where, DC Brave and the Bold, trading that kind of stuff. Yeah, some of it might been worth money, but I don't think a lot of it was, unless there were some key first appearances, and I don't remember if there were or not. But this one kid got involved as he brought in his dad's suitcase of comic books, and they were from early Marvel, like 1963 and like to 1965. And I had go through my hands like a ton of Tales of Suspense, Tales to Astonish, Avengers single digit comics, a few Spider-Mans that were like in the 20s and 30s and in numbering. Fantastic early issues of Fantastic Four, so like a lot of those are worth a lot right now, and I read them and I was like, what is this? At the time, it was like I wanted to read the current stuff, so I remember my first exposure to Nick Fury, and in there either he traded me some Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos plus him as Nick Fury, Agent of Shield. So like I had a lot of them go, and I didn't keep a damn one of them. Man, I wish I did because they weren't in bad shape. They were definitely probably VG or higher, and I would have loved to have those issues now. I'm buying them now for a lot more money. But yeah, those are the ones that I regret the most is, I think I don't remember for sure, but I'm pretty sure I had the first appearance of Captain America in the Silver Age, which is Avengers number 4,
Jeez.
go through my hands, and several others. So yeah, I bid it big time. But as a kid, you don't care, and you could, as a kid, you saw the difference in the art style. It was like from Chris going to McFarlane to somebody else, and McFarlane had a very distinctive art that you was attracted to you at the time. This was like going from Ditko, which I didn't gain an appreciation for until much later, and comparing it with like let's see, what's some of the big Spider-Man artists, Buscema, stuff like that. And I was like, no, I want to read this one. Art was a lot. I will tell you this right now. Art was a way bigger deal to me when I was a kid than it is now. Like, I wanted more realistic stuff, and now I don't care. That's the way I was. So that was a very interesting question. I like that trading question.
Yeah, I wish it makes me. I mean, maybe if I think about it some more, I'll some of it'll come back to me. But it makes me wish I could see what those trades were again. You know, I wish I
Yeah.
had some kind of like journal of it or something to remember what the actual trades were and stuff. It'd be interesting to look at now, although it probably would break my heart if I saw some of them. But yeah, we were the same way though. You know, we went back a little bit to like to the McFarlane stuff and the earlier issues of Wolverine that had come out before we started collecting, but that was about it. You know, any older than that, we didn't really weren't really interested in. We were interested in, you know, those artists that McFarlane, Liefeld, Lee, all the guys that basically left to create Image, Larson, you know. That was the big deal for us at the time. And that those guys were still putting out new stuff, and that's what we were focused on. So
okay, this question is a tough one for me, but you might be able to answer it easier. What this is from Rob, your co-host from the comic book what do you call it again? I forget.
A booster club.
Yeah, I gotta remember because the booster throws me off. Every time I hear booster, I think of gold. I want to say
yeah, comic book booster gold.
Comic book booster gold club. But his question is, what are your least favorite DC properties and why?
Oh man,
that's a tough question for me because I don't have a lot of least favorites or like if you answered Marvel, I'd flat out say Deadpool. He just doesn't interest me.
Yeah, I don't like him either.
And I enjoyed his movie. I'll tell you, I enjoyed his movie, but it didn't make
I did too, yeah.
It didn't make me want to go read more Deadpool. But nope. Man, outside of Deadpool, there's not too much that he's asking DC.
Right.
Because there's time periods where I really, really like it, and I even like the bad stuff because to me it's history. But if I have to answer characters, like, man, that's tough.
That is tough. I almost have to look at like a list of big DC characters.
I guess Cain and Abel, because they're just the introduction people. Unless they did some of the Vertigo stuff, I guess I don't care. Cain and Abel, the three witches from the story that you just mentioned, because I haven't read much of them.
Yeah, you're definitely reaching there.
Ambush Bug, even though I like it, it's very satirical, almost like on the Deadpool realm.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't frequently.
And then I guess the other one, so I guess I am coming up with some, would be Mr. Mxyzptlk. I'm not a fan of his because he reminds me of Gizmo on the Flintstones. He just comes and wrecks havoc.
Yeah. Yeah, that I mean
there have been some good Mxyzptlk stories that I've enjoyed, but he's a character, especially in the Silver Age and Bronze Age, that I didn't really care for.
Mm-hmm.
So I did come up with them. I was reaching, but I did.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of times it depends on, like, the creators can make the characters interesting or the properties interesting. So I have a hard time. There's some aspects of the expanded Green Lantern mythos that I don't care too much. Like the Red Lanterns don't interest me that much.
Oh man, did you read Charles Soule Red Lantern?
I don't know if I read all.
It was like towards its cancellation. Yeah. Oh my God. God, that was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could get into one that, if it was written really well, you know.
Yeah, I heard I mentioned the Red Lanterns in your podcast.
Like yeah, how they're featuring in
Keep
Green
It Up. That's one. That's
So, yeah, so they don't, like, they're not going to just draw me in on their own. And Larfleeze also, don't really care about. But yeah, like I said, anything.
Larfleeze interests me because of what he's so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with any of them, I think I don't follow characters as much as I do writers and artists, you know. So a lot of times I'll try something even if the character doesn't draw me in. So because I'm not as character focused, it's that makes it kind of tough for me, because
Yeah.
a lot of the major DC properties, I'm at least curious about, especially the ones that they still kind of focus on today. Whereas, I've never, I mean, I might enjoy it if I looked into it more, but I've never really, I don't feel a strong pull towards Arrak, or I know, like, I like, while I
Oh,
do.
that I was tempted to put Arak in there until I read some just fairly recently.
Yeah, because I never really read any, so
Yeah,
same thing.
when I first read the question, I was gonna throw in Arak and Arion.
Arion, yeah, it's
Yeah, those are the two that came out. But man, I was like, there were stories in there that I really enjoyed, so I didn't want to put them in there. So, but. They were close. Like when you said Arak, I was like, yeah. He was kind of like a Turok kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mike Grell, but I've never really read any Warlord.
Oh, that's great.
So I think I probably
You can't
would like
you can't
Warlord.
even put a Warlord there though, because you
No,
hadn't read
so
it.
I don't think it really counts. I probably would like it, at least the stuff that Mike Grell did. Because didn't there's other creators that have worked like to pick that up and taken it, right? But as far as as far as stuff that they're currently publishing, most of the characters, they some interest me more than others. And it kind of depends on what is done with them, like where, like, you know, but there's some that I really gravitate more towards, you know, obviously like the Flash and Wonder Woman and stuff. Whereas and then on others, I might be influenced a little bit more on whether or not the creative team does something interesting with it, like Jason Todd, Red Hood. I could go kind of either way on him, depending. Deathstroke, even though he has a connection to the Titans, which I love, it can kind of depend on, like, what is done with him. You know, whether they make them interesting. Like I'm definitely looking forward to, and I'm kind of I'm interested in the new series coming out with Priest writing it and stuff. But if somebody with like a Rob Liefeld kind of mindset gets a hold of the Deathstroke and they take on the more superficial aspects of the character, I can kind of get bored with that. Yeah, it's tough.
I think I came up with a good list. I think it's an honest list. If I had to give up five characters, that's what I would do. I could live without those five.
Yeah, it's tough to, it's especially tough to get into ones that they're focusing on today, because they've kind of, especially with the like going into putting out less titles and doing a lot of double shipping, they're kind of concentrating on more characters that'll sell, you know, and more prominent, like strong properties. Although, you know, like they're gonna try these miniseries, which that's cool. I guess I could say, like, if you wanna talk, if you wanna consider Wildstorm part of DC now, like those characters, like, don't draw me in as well. Although, like, I am interested in the Midnighter and Apollo miniseries, and I think it's cool that they're doing one. You know, those characters don't have the same like draw to me, the Wildstorm characters in general, like when they tried to pull a lot of them in during the New 52, like Grifter and
Voodoo,
Voodoo and
yeah.
stuff like that. I mean,
Stormwatch.
yeah, Stormwatch, like I'm still not really totally sold on them as a part of the DC universe, but it isn't anything new. On the other
I
hand,
thought
it is.
Grifter worked well in the Future's End. I think he
Yeah, that's
worked
true.
all right in there, especially early on.
Yeah, that was
The
probably
whole
the.
idea that he could see aliens was pretty cool. It was kind of like the Roddy Roddy Piper movie, They Live. I would say when he could put on the shades and see him.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, that's probably Grifter, and then Midnighter have probably been the two like that they've been most successful kind of mixing in, like
Yeah.
Midnighter and Grayson and that connection. So yeah, that's tough. I probably could come up with more Marvel ones too, even though I grew up with Marvel.
Marvel, I even have a hard time because I have this mentality that there are no bad characters.
No, I
There are
kind
only
of,
writers
yeah.
that I don't care for.
No, I agree with that too,
So
like I said.
it's tough because I don't come from that mentality. Like that even came from like the Gotham. They talked about the creepers. Like I don't like the creeper. So yeah, I don't think like that, I guess.
Yeah.
It's easier to name my favorite than it is for me to lay my least.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just the way that I am, but
No, I'm the same
yeah,
way.
I'm just looking at like when he asked that question, one of the things I could do quickly is I could walk over to my Eagle Moss because it has a good portion of the statues, with the exception of Cain and Abel and all those.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I love every one of these characters. So man, it was tough. I was looking at all of them, and I was like, yeah, I have fond memories of every single one of them. So it's a tough, it's a fine line. I'm sure if I had Who's Who in front of me, I it would be easier. Or my DC encyclopedia.
Yeah, it's tough, but like you said, I'm kind of the same way where it's changed a lot. You know, when I was a kid, I mean, I could answer that question really easily when I was a kid, which it was like pretty much all DC properties besides Batman did
Not a
not interest
yeah,
me.
I'm not a fan of the super pets, but when it comes to Ace and Crypto, I absolutely love.
Yeah.
Like, they can write Crypto, and I just like, especially during the Crypto Good Boy, where he'd have his own like thought bubbles before the New 52, I would like break down on some of those.
Yeah.
And I even kind of broke down on the recent Rebirth with, Crypto was in there. So I love Crypto, but when you get to Streaky, and I think his name is Bippo, and Comet, like, I don't care about those characters or those animals. Well, it's weird because you put the dog there, and I'm like, oh my God. It's like a different story.
Yeah, well, you love dogs, so
Yeah.
that's not too much of a surprise. But yeah, I've changed a lot. When I was a kid, I definitely followed characters. Well, I guess that's not true though, because I was really into artists, but I characters definitely meant a lot more to me. And nowadays, you know, it's a lot more about the creators. And you know, if it's a like even those ones that I said, even the ones that I listed, if some of my favorite creators were on those books, I would still check it out.
Yeah.
So, but that's a good question though. Makes you think.
So we got two more books to cover and a quick synopsis of Battlestar Galactica's episode 4. So let's rock.
All right. So yeah, I'll do this kind of quick. This week, Marvel Unlimited continues to, although like every week, they add new issues. You know, the whatever came out 6 months earlier. But they also a lot of times will add, in addition to those, they'll continue to add to the backlog of older titles. And this past Monday, they put the first 15 issues of the Iron Fist solo series from 75 on there. A lot of times, the stuff that
That's
they add,
interesting that it took them that long to add that.
Yeah, there's still a
Did they
lot
put
of.
all of them out there? Like, there's only like 15 issues, right? Or something like that.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they put 15 issues in. I don't know if that's all of them. I didn't
Yeah,
check.
yeah.
Yeah, they've been adding some Power Man, Iron Fist type stuff. Although that said, they haven't added any of the actual Power Man and Iron Fist series. It does seem to connect sometimes to if they know
Their media, their
the
whatever,
media. Yeah,
yeah.
the media, because they've added some Doctor Strange also this year. In the past, they've kind of focused on getting like the Avengers and the members of the Avengers and their solo series and Spider-Man, like the big ones. They've been getting those complete from the beginning to the end. But anyways, so this is the Chris Claremont and John Byrne. So it kind of jumps in a little bit, because before this, I've talked about Iron Fist's origin on the show before, I think, and they did have Power Man and Iron Fist going for a while before this. But this story is called A Duel of Iron. In addition to Claremont and Byrne, you have Al McWilliams as the inker, Janice Cohen as the colorist. Is edited by Marv Wolfman, with letters by Dave Hunt. But anyways, it's a rare issue that actually is in the second person, where the captions are talking to Iron Fist. Like, you are Iron Fist, and this night you are breaking the law. So that it's the title, A Duel of Iron, and is because as the title, or as the cover shows you, yeah, it's Iron Fist versus Iron Man, actually. But the reason Iron Man's breaking into his facility, because his girlfriend, Colleen Wing, has been kidnapped. And I don't know if this is stuff that happened in previous issues, or if it's just a storytelling technique, because they give you a flashback where he's fighting against this guy named Angar. Oops, I just pressed the button and turned the iPad.
Oh, I didn't know you did it off your
I
iPad.
locked it off the iPad. Yeah, the Marvel Unlimited. Yeah, I'm doing
Oh,
it. I pressed the button on the top on my finger
you're
clicked.
not recording off your iPad, but you have
No,
your
no, no. Yeah,
iPad.
I just have it in front of me. Yeah, no, I'm recording. I got Skype on the laptop. But anyways, so he's fighting against this guy named Angar the Screamer, who's from a group called the Mindstorm, and he's interrogating him, trying to figure out where did they take Colleen Wing, and that's who he finds out from, that Tony Stark is involved, and Stark International, that there's this place that called Halwan, which is a treasure trove of different minerals and stuff. The person who controls it wasn't interested in dealing with Stark. And so they're trying to throw Stark out of the deal, but Iron Fist got involved, and so that's why they kidnapped Colleen Wing, to get Iron Fist out of it. So Iron Fist, he breaks into this facility that is owned by Tony Stark, and he ends up running into Misty Knight while she's in there. She's Misty Knight's dressed in a costume I hadn't really seen before. It's yellow with black leggings, and she's got a red belt that has MK on it. But I guess that's probably the costume she must have had, like, regularly around this time. But Misty actually kicks him in the face before she realizes who he is. Misty and Colleen, they work together. It's kind of funny. I don't think they would use this name nowadays, but their group is called Nightwing Restorations. Misty Knight's there for Colleen as well, and so they team up, and they find the man that Colleen Wing was supposed to meet, this guy named Donald Cawley, who seems to have been killed. He's a security guard or something like that. And so there's this advanced computer called the Delphi system. They use it, they're trying to use it to basically track down where Colleen was taken because it connects to the Angar guy somehow. But meanwhile, this is going on. Tony Stark is actually present in the building and he gets an intruder alert. And there must have been something on the time at the time. Iron Fist was thought to have been a by the police to be a killer at the time because that's how Tony Stark recognizes him from the news and says, "Oh, you must have," because he also sees that Don Colley, his security guard, is he was a friend of Tony Stark's as well, and so he assumes that he was killed by Iron Stark, by Iron Fist. Too many
But Tony
characters. Yeah,
Stark, you
Tony
tore the
Stark.
world apart.
So yeah, as the cover promises, we get the classic superhero misunderstanding where Iron Man appears and you have Iron versus Iron. But it's pretty cool though because they're in this region where there's cyrogenic fuel storage. So Tony doesn't use his repulsor blast, so they it's more of a fist fight. So it's kind of cool that Iron Fist is fighting a guy in a suit of armor, but he has such powerful kung fu, that he can still hold his own. So the fight continues, and actually Iron Fist starts to get the best better of him when there's a distraction. Something happening in the computer center, and Iron Fist actually thinks, because that's where he left Misty, he thinks actually she got injured or something's there's an explosion, so she might have even been killed, and he's getting really like tired of people that are connected to him getting killed. So he uses a distraction, and his anger really starts taking down Iron Fist, and he's actually worried that he might have seriously injured him. But Iron Fist, Iron Man's armor's really tough, so he's okay. But they're still going at it. Eventually, Misty Knight, she's fine. She shows up, and Don Colley is okay as well. She's got him with him. And it turns out that he was playing dead and tried to sneak up and kill Misty Knight, so he's actually not dead. He was just he's working for the enemy, and that she explains that she interrogated him and found out that there's a bunch of sleeper agents that are part of that have been put into Stark International that are working for the opposition that for that Tony's the island that Tony wanted to acquire, they were the ones that kidnapped Colleen, and Tony Stark and Iron Man have nothing to do with it. And the whole thing was kind of a setup, and to get them to oppose each other and take each other out. So at the end of the issue, Iron Man says, "I'd like to help, but and Tony Stark would want me to help, but unfortunately, I have more urgent commitments." And Iron Man says he's understands, so that Iron Man and Misty Knight, they go off to that island to try to find Colleen Wing. But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty neat issue. Definitely like typical style of the era, late 70s Marvel. Definitely feels like late 70s Marvel. The you can see sort of the difference from like the different inks on Byrne. You could tell it's George Byrne, but it doesn't look quite as snappy as the Byrne, as Byrne's work from Uncanny X-Men in that decade with the different inker.
There's only two issues I own of that, and that's 1 in 15, so I own the one you just talked about, and then 15 was the X-Men, where he versus the X-Men in the final issue. But the one that's going to be hard to track down is 14, because that's the first Sabretooth.
That's funny when you have those characters, they introduce them, like, I just got a bunch of cheap issues of Omega Men for 50 cents a piece, you know?
What series? The first one?
Yeah. But then, like, none of those issues are, like, worth anything. But then you have the first appearance of Lobo.
Yeah.
You know?
And it just goes up, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, like, this random, they happen to introduce Lobo in that series, and he got popular, but all the other issues are, like, worth next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to, like, you have to spend...
Very tame Lobo.
Yeah, different Lobo, but nonetheless, it's like...
From what he turned out to be, yeah.
It's a lot more than worth a lot more than 50 cents, you know, so it's just kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, I've complained in the past about, like, that issue of Birds of Prey, Volume 1, where you can get all the other issues pretty easily, but that one where,
number 8, yeah.
All but number 8, you know, it's like that one
it's
issue.
Dick Grayson with him and her on the cover, yep.
Yep. Making out.
I just bought that one, like, 10 years ago. It was, like, the only one I was missing.
Yeah.
I think my comic shop would pull stuff out of my pull list back when I was in that era.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Because it makes no sense why I missed what I missed if I had a pull list.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't stop any titles. I didn't go, you know, why was I missing a few No Man's Land? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's probably because he sold out, and he's like, oh, you want to buy one? $10. Okay. Take it out of box, whatever. So,
yeah, that sucks.
Good
way to lose customers. You make money in the short term, but then you lose a customer.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's kind of dumb, you know.
So my last one, I'm just going to be real sweet and real short. I just recently got the Spider-Man Todd McFarlane omnibus. Mm-hmm. So what this features is all of the Todd McFarlane stuff. Not an Amazing Spider-Man, because there's an Amazing Spider-Man omnibus, but the Spider-Man series that he helped launch from Amazing Spider-Man,
where
he actually wrote it and drew it. And as far as writing, it was a really dark tone to Spider-Man. It had elements of him being innocent and young still when he's like with MJ and he's talking to her. They still had like light humor and stuff, but this is kind of introducing the lizard is kind of loose. Mm-hmm. And he's basically killing a lot of people. And Spider-Man doesn't know that yet. It's him. It's a really quick story. The art is amazing. Like, I don't know why he doesn't draw anymore, other than he says it's hard for him to draw anymore. Because I've seen him draw. Like, if you follow him on Facebook, sometimes he'll do those where he's drawing on that light display, computerized.
Oh, yeah.
And he does it pretty fast.
Right.
Like, he's talking while he's drawing. It's pretty amazing. But one thing that he was very known for was his webbing.
Mm-hmm.
He did a hell of a job with the webbing. I can't imagine doing that fast, because there's a lot of line work inside of that webs. And also the poses and stuff that he puts them in are pretty amazing. He drew a hell of a lizard. Lizard looks really like a monster ready to tear apart people.
Yeah.
It's really, you could almost see like the tone of Spawn in here, which he launches later.
Mm.
And he writes and draws that one too.
Right.
It's very similar. So, I enjoyed it a lot. It's hard to give a synopsis of it other than the art was beautiful, because it just kind of, it's kind of just having like a personal moment with Peter and MJ. a lot of swinging, talking about his life, and then having the lizard just like slaughter a bunch of random people at night as soon as the sun goes down. And there seems to be like a drum of some sort that's drawing him. It's like doom, 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 doom. And it looks like in the next issue we'll have a fight scene. But it was nice to revisit this, because I remember when it came out, I was like, oh my God, I have to have this.
Yeah, I remember the same thing. Yeah.
Does it still hold up? Yeah, I mean, the art is tight. I mean, it's really a pretty... The layouts are really good, too. Like, he has, like, these panel layouts that are really, really drawn out. Here it seems like the splash pages, they meant something. Like, they were in your face, you know? Mm-hmm. But they always say, like, 90s artists are not that good. Well, McFarlane really is awesome. I mean...
Yeah, there was really a lot good. Of well, just a lot of imitators, I think, that came along, or yeah. People they hired a lot of people that had similar styles to the
Capullo when he took over Spawn. Mm-hmm. His style was very much like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he might not be a good example of one that's like obviously he has talent and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And he's developed his own style a little bit more, but. But there were some that, you know, just kind of had a feel of the image artist, but weren't like were more egregious in terms of the faults. But
that's but yeah, you could understand why they were doing that. It's almost like Marvel says, "We know this sells.
Oh yeah,
I want you to have a house style like this."
Yeah.
Like, and then they show Liefeld, McFarlane, Portasio, you know, mm-hmm. all the yeah. Image founders, essentially Eric Larson. They say, okay, these we know these sell. Can you guys mock something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hype coming into Spider-Man number one though was just huge. Like, I remember that, and I remember that issue very well. I can almost picture some of the pages. But I can definitely picture the way that he drew the lizard and the webbing. And I remember MJ's hair was always huge. It had a lot of detail to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that issue was huge. And I do remember the tone, too, with the lizard being kind of dark. And then, of course, they had the issue. Then they brought the black costume back. There was a lot of stuff took place in the sewers and like dark streets and stuff. So you kind of I can see where you can feel that Spawn tone from it.
Mm-hmm.
It was funny too how you know Eric Larson had followed him on Amazing Spider-Man, and then later on when
very different style too.
Yeah, he kind of he ended up. He didn't do as many issues, like where he Larson was on Amazing Spider-Man for a while.
Yeah,
He did do a few issues of self-titled Spider-Man.
I'd be up for that if they did a Eric Larson omnibus, you know, like for Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean because
his style took me a while because it was kind of jarring. You went from a style you were used to a more how could I say it? He draws more like a Kirby-esque,
mm-hmm.
at least in his action and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going from like a McFarlane to a Kirby-style artist. It's a little jarring, but once I was like five issues in, I was like, man, I really like this guy.
Yeah. Whereas I have a lot of nostalgia for Eric Larson's run on Amazing because of... Because that was the only... Spider-Man was one of my favorite characters, and that was one of the only issues, or the only titles that I've ever had a subscription to, was that. I mean, that was kind of my favorite comic at the time. So that kind of made me a fan. And yeah, that was... That run definitely was... That was what was coming out at the time, the new issues. You know, we would go back and try to get the back issues of McFarlane stuff, but the currently coming out comic of Amazing was Eric Larson. For me, the transition that was tough was when Larson left the book and Bagley came on.
Yeah.
I like Bagley now, but at the time I was like, I just dropped the book. I mean, I was getting close to like not really, I wasn't collecting comics for much longer after that anyways, but you know, I did go back and read a few issues those when Bagley first came on the book, and now I mean I think it's good stuff. And
but he like came into his own, I think. Bagley did, like, he went from Spider-Man, and I remember him in Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
And then I also remember him on Ultimate Spider-Man, and that's when he did Ultimate Spider-Man, I was like, that's when he kind of, like, was his own artist, I thought.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I mean, that was
I
a lot
thought
of
his early stuff in Amazing looked similar, but different enough from Larson. I like Bagley. I'm not crazy about when Bagley went over to DC for some reason. But like if I look at his Ultimate Spider-Man and some of his Thunderbolts, I really liked it. So I don't know why, but they put him on Trinity and for some reason it didn't pop. It could have been the story or whatever, but
well, wasn't part of the reason they put him on that book was because
he's fast.
Yeah, he's fast. But I think like it's still his art is still affected by the speed. You know, like I think he still benefits from having some more time.
I want to revisit that at some point, even though I don't remember it very fondly. I still want to read it again. And I don't think I own that one because I wasn't that fond of it, but I might buy it. So let's get into Battlestar Galactica episode 4, part 1 of 2.
Yes.
I will tell you this, that I'm still very interested. I really, and maybe this is just me and my nostalgia, but I think the plots and the things are really holding up to today for me. And the actors were just as solid. I did see Ed Bagley this time.
Yeah, I did spot him this time. It was a little easier to see.
He was prepping the party.
Right.
They were like stealing stuff for the mess hall because I did find it a little fast that they took the relationship of Apollo and what is her name? I can't remember her name.
In real life, Jane Seymour.
Jane Seymour's character, Cernia, I can't remember her name. It begins with an S. They took their relationship further. There's a big scene in there where he basically proposes to him. Even Boxy like throws him like some people are slow or something like that. Like what was that little speech about?
Yeah.
But he actually proposes in front of Adama and his sister and his best friend to get married, and that's one of the big plot points in here. And I really like what they did here. It's very similar to an episode of Buck Rogers that we reviewed. In what happens to this in this episode, because it's a virus, you know, the virus takes out all their best fighters and they have to go with a different fighter base. And in Buck Rogers, we saw it when their fighter pilots, they had to go back to like their old veterans. And that's
when we had the
original Buck Rogers come back, you know, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But this is very similar, except a lot of these pilots now are shuttle pilots, you know, so there's a lot of interesting stuff. But why don't you give us a plot synopsis and then we'll get into the parts we liked or didn't like.
Well, yeah, you kind of started to touch on it that Boomer and I forget, I think it wasn't it the guy that we said was kind of like Borkins.
Yeah, it's Jolly, I think. His name is Jolly.
that the two of them they contract a space illness of some sort. And meanwhile, like you said, Apollo is gonna be married to Serena, so they're gonna Green Bean, which is Bagley's character, they're gonna throw a bachelor kind of bachelor party for Apollo and stuff. And meanwhile, Apollo and Starbuck are late getting back because they find this part of space that is kind of like a void. And Apollo goes into it, and his instruments aren't really registering properly. And Starbuck actually has to rescue him and lead him back out. So they get back late, but by that point, Boomer and Jolly they think that they need to rush because they think they're late. So they kind of bypass the normal procedures for
The decamp, yeah,
decontamination.
decontamination. They effed up big time.
Yeah, and so
Because
actually, like,
that's like standard procedure.
right.
They like really screwed up.
Yeah. So Boomer actually is at the party when Adama's I forget what's his name, Adama's like second.
Colonel Ty.
Yeah, Ty calls and he thinks Boomer's already like drunk off his ass. He's like, if you guys are gonna get wasted, we're gonna cancel this party right now. He's like, no, I don't feel good. Well, they end up having to kind of quarantine them in the room because the illness spreads to everybody else in the room that's we're getting ready for the party. So when Apollo and Starbuck actually get nearby, like, wait, don't go in there. So as you said, because everyone's ill, meanwhile, Apollo finds out that Serena has been a part of a group that's training to replace the shuttle pilots because, they lost so much personnel, in the initial story from the Cylons. And he finds out that that she's been doing this, and he's concerned about her safety. And well, of course, he's even more concerned when Dama suggests that they have to use that Apollo and Starbuck are have to lead a group of the they're gonna have to start training these. It's funny because the group of new pilots, including Serena, it's like all attractive women.
Yeah.
It's like they
I
only
like the costumes. They almost look like colonial costumes, but they would put like black pieces of tape over their privates.
it's like
It's a
one of the
strip of
qualifications.
electrical tape over their crotch and breasts.
Yeah, it's, so well, apparently one of the qualifications to be a shuttle pilot is you have to be an attractive young woman.
Yeah, they don't let there you have to have a certain they have their standards.
It's kind of funny, like there in my where I grew up, there was this ice cream shop, and the only employees you ever saw there were like pretty teenage girls, and my buddy used to always like put in applications there, like. Just as like just to see if they would ever actually call him, and he'd never get a call. But so I guess that's the case here. So yeah, so they have to train them, and it's not going real well. Like, but it's understandable. Like they're being given a crash course, and
Yeah, that one girl freaks out initially. She almost like goes off, loses control, and
oh
then
yeah.
Apollo's like, you gotta turn your autopilot on. Turn your autopilot on.
Yeah, the blonde woman, like
Yeah,
yeah,
she
like they
almost lost it.
yeah they make like kind of a big production of them all launching off of the Galactica, and it's like they have enough trouble doing that. I thought like this is not going to go that well if it was such a accomplishment just to even launch off the battleship. But But yeah, the mission, I think, if I remember correctly, the mission was they have to return to the site.
Yeah, they have to return to the site to get something for the doctors.
Yeah, so that they can come up with a cure for the illness. And
Yeah.
the danger, I believe, in doing that it was near like a silent outpost or something like that.
Yeah, the Cylon Outpost is on the
Yeah.
planet. That's why they originally went down, Boomer and Jolly, is they actually spotted the Cylon
Right.
Outpost and went back to say, we can't go this way, because
Yeah.
what they're basically doing is trying to find a path for Galactica.
Right.
And it's interesting because Starbuck saves Apollo's life in this one, I think, because he gets into that black mess where there's like no star, his navigational system. He doesn't know if he's going left. He doesn't know if he's going right. He's like caught in this empty space and he doesn't know
Yeah.
how to get out. And Starbuck is like, I've done this before in the academy. You know, I kind of know how to fly without being able to have any instruments. And he basically counts his way. Like, so he's like really smart, is like, I'm gonna count like so many seconds to get here. I'm gonna fire my thrusters. I want you to turn around when I turn around. Look at my thrusters as a guide. And then he starts counting so he knows like when he should start seeing stars and he gets them out there. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah,
I
that was
thought
really cool.
that was badass. I mean, Starbuck went in there after his buddy, and because Apollo was he was gone. He even started to freak out a little bit into the panicky.
Yeah, because he got far enough ahead, and at first, Starbuck was holding back because he said, if I go any further, I'm not going to be able to find my way back, or and so he kind of needed to come up with that plan that you said as a way of getting Apollo out there, because their communications was getting interrupted too. Like they could only kind of hear each other. It was like real broken up, like bad cell phone service.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really cool. But
And
then
then
they end up using the void later on, right, as a way.
that's where they plan on where Adama wants to take them
Yeah, they
to
decided
the
to take him in
void.
there.
So they want to go into the void while they're getting the cure to try to save them. But at the same time, Baltar has come into power and has been giving his own, not what are they called again? They're not battle stars. They're whatever those things are called. They're those big Cylon ships.
Right.
He's given command on his own one to find the humans, and he's kind of going with like a really conservative approach. Is he kind of knows that they're either gonna run into them or they're gonna go into this black part of the void where they can't get out of. And he's kind of just watching right now. And
Yeah.
he's like letting them play into him. Like he knows they're gonna go back and land to try to find, like he knows they're going back that way. And it's interesting because you have that one robot which is like his number one kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
He's like there and he's like, I find Baltar fascinating. We could learn a lot from this man.
Yeah, isn't his name like Lucifer or something
Lucifer,
like that? Yeah.
yeah, that's awesome. But I really dig it. Like it's a very addictive show, even for it being what it is. The effects are still good, you know. I'm sure they'll go off the rails as we go on, but they still have budget at this time.
Yeah, it was still a very good episode. I'm looking forward to the next part. So far it doesn't, I don't know. I had gotten the impression that, especially when the rebooted series was out, that the I heard things that made you think that the original was real cheesy and stuff, but so far, I mean, it might get that way later on, I don't know, but so far it's been really good, I thought.
It's like Buck Rogers season one. It was
Yeah.
it's really solid right now.
Yeah, so far.
So, I th there was a lot of things in here. I mean, even Adama is like turning into that leader, like where he's trying to think like 4 steps, 5 steps ahead. Like he'll just go off in his room and he'll start thinking, and he's like, you know, we got to go this way, you know. And then he actually goes back to his room and he finds the scrolls. And the scrolls talk about the darkness. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I forgot
so,
about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so that's like a key plot point. So, yeah, there's so much here. And I just, I dig the characters. They all... Cassiopeia, who was the, I think, the prostitute from the first season, looks like she's now working like comm or something on the main Battlestar.
Yeah,
I don't
she
know
was.
If you noticed it, but
yeah,
she
was in
she
that.
showed
Or,
up.
yeah, she was in the episode two. Not a lot, but yeah, she's like
She didn't
had
have
some other
much
kind of
lines in
role.
this one, but she did show up. Yeah.
Yeah, she was present there and stuff, and yeah, a lot of
I found it
charismatic
interesting
characters.
how those security guards walk into the barracks and they wanted like they were gonna bust them. And then Colonel Ty comes in and say, you know, who's responsible for this? And he goes, it's me. And there's like, Colonel? And they like back off.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they kind of took more requisitions or what do you call them, rations than they normally should.
Right. But these guys actually, it seems like they might have something against the pilots too. Like, you know, they're like ship security and maybe like, pilot wannabe pilots, but they didn't make it, so they're a little bitter. They seemed a little vengeful as when they went in there,
yeah,
even though they had just reason to be.
yeah, definitely good episode. I'm looking forward to watching the next part. This is a two-parter as well,
yeah,
so should be.
I also want to see like what. Why Baltar is playing a conservative role, like kind of watching right now.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely got an upgrade from where we saw him. He was in pretty bad. He was in a pretty bad state.
He would have been killed if the other guy didn't die. The other Centurion or whatever they called him, by your command. Whatever the commander is on the ship, they sit on these like circular chairs, almost like a guardian of the universe on Oa or something. They're
and
like
they always...
way up there above you, and their arms are kind of, they have like these armrests that are circular, and they just sit there.
Yeah, they're always and they're always facing away from you when you walk in the room, so they can turn around slowly. But yeah, he's definitely like he was very lucky that that leader got replaced. The other one didn't really think much of his input, but when, he was very lucky that the new one came along to.
I haven't liked the training sequence because they have these simulators, right? And what the first woman that's in there, you know, she like shoots the Cylon and she's like, "Yeah, I did it." And he's like, but you also shot me. Starbuck is like, I was right there in the path of those the laser fire. I'm dead.
Yeah. They had there was a lot that happened in the episode because they had a couple of the I thought like a couple of them would end up dying on the mission. And none of them did, but especially
we're
that
not
mom.
Done yet though.
That's true.
I'm pretty sure we're gonna lose someone.
Yeah, that's true. But, what did I say? Oh, but they had a few of the women really stood up, like, really adapted well. Some were okay, some kind of struggled, but I know there was one black woman that.
Yeah,
like,
she stood out. Like, she
turned out to be, like, the best of all of them that was, like, kind of, like, became, like, a second.
Well, she saved one of them, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Against orders.
Right. Yeah, she's proved to be really
adapted. So she like
kinda.
She adapted like from a shuttle pilot to a warrior in a matter of hours because this wasn't like they had a lot of training. They knew they had to train, but we're talking about a day or two maybe if they were lucky.
Yeah.
They knew how to fly. They just
ability.
Didn't know how to fly a Viper.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it was very, very good episode, I thought.
I'm glad we're watching this, 'cause I remembered a lot of the movie. I didn't remember this. But man, I was young, and maybe I didn't have a good attention span, but I was like, 10 or 11 when this was out.
Yeah, I mean, I know I never watched it, so it's cool to check it out.
Yeah. All right, well,
That was
I
a
guess we could. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say it was a good time period for sci-fi, you know,
It
because
really
then,
was.
like
It
when I
really
because,
was.
and then by the time I was little, or by the time I was like old enough to watch TV and get into shows and stuff like a lot sci-fi had become less popular until like the Next Generation came around, and eventually once that show had success after like 4 or 5 years, like you started to have other sci-fi shows start popping up on TV. But there was a stretch like early 80s when there wasn't a lot of sci-fi on TV, but
I think it was because of cost.
yeah,
It seemed
that
very
could be
cost
it.
prohibitive.
Yeah, could be right about that.
But they
So
had some good actors in these, at least in my
Yeah,
opinion.
it's got a good cast.
All right, well, we can wrap this one up.
All
And
right.
this has been Geek Brunch Retrocast episode, I don't remember. Is it 70 something? 73? 74?
I think
Where?
it's 76,
Okay, so we're up there in the
77.
70s, I know that.
It is. Oh no, you're right, 73.
73.
Yep.
So, you can reach us at, well, why don't you do a little pimping of your new monthly podcast real quick?
Okay,
Say
it's
goodbye.
called Comic Book Booster Club, and I do it with Rob Kreiger, and who you should, if you listen to the show, he was a guest on an earlier episode a few months ago. And it is a pretty general show. If you listen to the regular Geek Brunch, it kind of has some things in common with that. It's a monthly show. And so we put out the first episode a couple weeks ago, and it's going to kind of just be mostly newer books that we'll talk about, like month or two old. Kind of fills in that gap for me, like an opportunity for me to talk about newer stuff and to talk to Rob. But we'll occasionally like might mix in an older book. Like last time, Rob's been reading a lot of Shazam, Captain Marvel stuff, and so he talked about a Superman issue. But so yeah, you can find that on iTunes. It has its own feed, or if you subscribe to my Mythmaking, etc. feed, where everything goes, it'll show up on there too.
And as
So,
far as us, we're on geekbrunch podcast.com, and that's where you can find all the episodes and download the episodes from. We're also on iTunes, where you could leave an iTunes review under Geek Brunch Podcast. If it's for this particular one, make sure you put that it's for Retrocast. And you can mythmakingetc@gmail.com, mike@comicbooknoise.com, and at MythMakingETC on Twitter and at Mike Myers Brunch, and I think that sums it up. Until
yep.
and if you want to keep with us on the Battlestar Galactica's, we're going to be on episode 5, and it's all up on Netflix. So you join in, and I think that if you have a retro bone in your body and you like sci-fi, I think so far, if you watch the first four, you will enjoy this series.
Yeah.
It's fun sci-fi.
Yeah, if you have a retro bone in your body, this will probably give you a retro boner.
A retro boner. That's right. That's where you go. All right. Well, I'll talk to you soon, Chris. I'm gonna hang up real quick and then talk to you real quick. Okay. I'm gonna stop the
Okay, sounds
recording.
good.
All right.